Hello, listeners. For this episode, we're not welcoming you to Duskwall. Instead, we're taking a bit of a breather between seasons and doing a Q&A episode. It's the five of us chatting and answering some audience questions. We'll be back with the season two opener in 2 weeks. Some quick announcements. I continue to be going to a Catacon from November 9th through 11th. If you're going, let me know or track me down while we're there and get a cool bookmark. And Minna and Madge will be on the soon-to-be-released Weird West Monster of the Week podcast, Ironhides. I will put a link to more information about that in the show notes. Next, let me tell you about this month's featured charity. Asada's Daughters is a Chicago organization that supports, serves, and uplifts women-identified young Black people. The group provides education to Black girls and women in radical Black feminism, political organization, and liberation. They offer educational programs and workshops, organize protests and resistance actions, and maintain a community garden for the neighborhood. If you can spare a few dollars, consider donating. Midterm elections in the United States are exactly 1 week from today. Please vote, and please continue to call your representatives, protest, donate, resist. And now, your bonus episode. Hi, everybody, and welcome to our season one wrap-up and Q&A episode. You guys are all probably still a little bit angry at me for how I ended the season finale.
I'm not.
So let's start off with introductions.
Hi, my name is Kim. I play Blair Culhane. And you can find me on Twitter at Kim Deanna Jones, spelled just like Indiana Jones, but the I-N is replaced with K-I-M.
And what was one of your favorite moments from season one?
One of my favorite moments from season one was when I, like, critically successed Blair's command role to call all those ghosts to action, and she had that little speech.
Yeah, that was very good. I just edited that a couple days ago, and it was great.
It was just a very rewarding character moment for me.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Josie Sino. You can find me on Twitter at Dragon Girl Josie and a bunch of other places that I link to from there. My favorite moment.
Say who you play.
Oh, right. I play Minx. Hi. And my favorite moment from season one probably would be the finale, honestly. Just like how everything came to their head and the pace we went through it at and all the character moments. Just that whole episode left me feeling really good. Mm. Or rather, bad in a good way.
Emotionally devastated is, I think, kind of a goal to aim for.
Sounds about right.
To write a story.
Especially for a season finale.
Yep.
Hi, I'm Minna. I play Myra Keel. You can find me on Twitter at Myna Minar, M-Y-N-A-M-I-N-N-A-R-R. I realize my Twitter handle is a nightmare. I don't like it either. favorite moments. It's really hard to pick a favorite moment because I really like this show.
It doesn't have to be like the top favorite moment. It can just be one of your favorite moments.
So as we speak, we just published the Duskforn episode, and anyone who knows me knows I'm a found family feels goblin, so I'm going to have to go with that, and especially Myra and Finn exchanging gifts because Finn and I cooked that up behind the scenes, and I'm so happy it happened.
Yeah, that was a very good episode.
Did I say Finn and I cooked it up?
Yeah.
You did, yeah.
You did.
What I mean is I was looking at your name lighting up in the voice chat, and it says Finn, and it doesn't have Madge in it.
Hi, I'm Madge. I play Finn on The Magpies, which is the podcast that you're listening to right now. You can find me on Twitter at Madge Quips. You can also find me at pretty much any social media at that tag. My favorite moment from season one was also the Duskforn episode, just because I got to do a lot of character stuff with Finn that I didn't usually get to do, especially with like Finn getting the tattoo on her hand. I thought that was super cool and gave another layer to her character about how much the Magpies mean to her. Just in case that episode didn't get you hard enough with family feels.
And I am Ree. I am the GM, so I play everybody else. and I think one of my favorite moments, and this is one of, I have a lot of favorite moments, but I think one of my favorite moments is going way back to the very beginning of the show, is when I introduced Kay. I didn't have a name for her. I was just like, I needed a throwaway, you know, exposition dump character. Mm-hmm. And I described
this. You gave us Gwendolyn Christie.
Tall, buff, tattooed gondolier woman, and everybody in the game was like, oh my god, we love her. And so I was like, well, shit, now I've got to give her a name and have her come back.
Yeah, you just very casually, for this throwaway character, ruthlessly attacked all of us.
You created someone that catered to all of our interests.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I love those moments where, like, I will come up with something, like, very random and on the fly, and you guys just grab it and run, because that leads to some really cool stuff, because Kay has been a super cool character.
Yeah.
So my next question that I have for everybody is, what is one of your most unexpected or surprising moments? I think we'll go in reverse order up the list this time. So Madge.
Oh man. Something that I wasn't expecting, but that I seriously love, is honestly how Blair and Finn just relate to each other, and how we got this like weird mix of BuzzFeed Unsolved with these two.
BuzzFeed Unsolved is a big inspiration for us.
Yeah. So like specifically just how. It's not even like a Bugara Shaniak split, because
right. It's a. I feel like we have a mix of both in both of us.
Yeah,
right? Because I'm obviously reverent to the spirits, but also I'm not scared of them.
You're pissing them off on purpose.
It's a mix of both of
and
them.
And then like Finn believes, and fiercely so, but has like the "we don't touch them" mentality about it.
Yeah, we have this very fun camaraderie.
Yeah. I love their...
I love antagonizing Finn.
We need to do a void season 2.
Yeah, I will say that is absolutely one of my favorite, like, when I'm editing things, is where Blair will just say something completely, like, bonkers off the wall in relation to spirits, and then Madge is always the first one to be like, no! What are you doing?
Hey, check out this cool glowing bug. No!
No!
Don't do that!
I'm gonna put it in my mouth! Yeah, Minna, what have you got for...
God, I don't have good answers because I don't remember. Guys, I have no memory! I listened to the show, which means I remember surprises that happened, like, months and months and months ago. I'm gonna go really terrible with this. And say that in the finale, Kim made a Jurassic Park reference, and I understood it, and that was a huge surprise.
Yeah.
And I still giggle about that.
Oh, did we keep that in the episode, or do we have to explain that, Ree?
It's in the
bloopers. So oh, never. People, I need people. To choose a good one anyway. God, I was like, I'm surprised. I feel like I usually like get like really excited when like random backstory stuff suddenly comes in. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say when Clave showed up at the auction.
Yeah, that was fun. That was intense.
Yeah, that was really good.
Look, sometimes Ree just occasionally caters to me and I get really excited.
I do my best to do that for everybody.
Yes.
Josie.
I think my favorite surprise also comes from the finale when Blair just up and summoned a fucking demon.
Yeah.
Like, that's just a thing that happened. And as a subset of that, just like discovering what Satara looked like, and you describing like the shark tree grin, I'm just like,
she is very hot.
How dare
I should drop her sometime?
Yeah, it's just like, how dare you? How do you?
Oh yeah, no, she attacks me just as much.
You two are mean.
I realized I was just editing that scene earlier today, and I realized that I'm playing Satara as the chaotic evil version of a character from of basically the Sea Witch, the Lushak from the October Day books, which I don't know if anybody else in our listening audience reads those books. But if there's like one person out there who does, I hope you appreciate that. But yeah, that's also a really good moment.
Did you attack every single one of us in that episode?
Yeah, at some point.
Yeah.
That's my goal.
That's her job.
Kim, what have you got for surprises?
A lot of the good ones have already been said, so that's why I'm struggling. One of my favorite surprises was revealing Blair's family history, that she has a twin sister that she's very close to, and she actually comes from a fairly decent family in general. I feel like that's rare in RPG characters.
Yeah.
Mine, at least.
Especially in Blades.
Yeah.
Blair's fairly normal from her from a family perspective.
Uh-huh.
I think my favorite surprise was Finn murdering Avrathi.
I was going to bring that if no one else did.
That was real good. I was not like, it was a great moment and it took me totally by surprise.
That was so badass.
Yeah, it was like, I'm just going to shoot her to kill. Okay.
Yeah,
that was extremely good.
We're going to be dealing with the replications of that for a really long time, but I'm really glad.
Oh, yeah. if it raises the stakes, though.
Yeah.
Okay. So those are kind of the questions that I had for folks. Now we're going to move into our audience questions.
Woo-hoo!
We had a lot of people actually send in questions to us on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll start with this question from, I just realized that in doing this, I have doomed myself to trying to pronounce everybody's Twitter handles, which is going to be pretty fun. So from @JoeBotBabica, is the game really on the rules lighter side, or do you just cut those parts off in the edit? And how long do you edit an episode on average? So relative to a game like D&D, it is rules lighter.
Yeah, it's way less crunch than D&D, especially when it comes to combat.
Yes. That said, I also do cut a lot of the rules stuff.
Yeah.
Just because, in my opinion, I don't think it makes for good radio. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the mechanics stuff I do end up cutting. For the second question, I end up cutting about 50% of the audio that we record. So if we have 3 hours of audio, it ends up with an hour and a half of usable podcast episode ready audio, which works out pretty well for me because it tends to mean that then I can get 2 episodes out of one recording session, which is nice.
Yeah, which it just makes me think, like, Magpie's podcast, only 50% garbage.
So much trash you guys don't get to hear.
Well, let's say probably one of the main things, well, the main thing that I cut is me saying, and okay, so.
Mm-hmm. Another thing is me memeing off.
One thing that I cut a lot of is someone will go, what's a devil's bargain look like? 30 seconds of silence while I stare into the distance trying to think of a good devil's bargain. it is a fairly rules light game, mm-hmm. but we are an even rules lighter podcast.
Yeah. I also think there's another half of this question that I think is really cool for us. The question about like gaming go bag. I know that we record at home, but like, I still have like a specific set of stuff that I bring with me every single time we go to record. And I'm sort of wondering if anyone else does the same thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let's do that question. Cause I do.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, this was another question that, JoeBotBabica sent in. Mm-hmm. Which is, for each of the players, what's in your gaming go bag? And as Madge said, we record remotely. We are 5 people in 5 states and 4 time zones.
Mm-hmm.
So you should all be really impressed with the fact that we are able to get together to record at all.
You thought it was hard to get your group together to play.
Yeah. Yeah, the scheduling is... I mean, we've got it pretty good now, but
pretty okay.
Yeah,
all things considered, yeah.
Yeah, it's like if we're not available to meet at the one time every 2 weeks when we've got it scheduled, it's like, well, that's it.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Madge, why don't you go first on answering that question?
So in my gaming go bag, I have a bullet journal that I've used and converted basically into a notes document and a character sheet for Finn. I have notes about her family in there. I have notes about significant events that have happened like throughout gameplay that I can remember. I also keep a whole dice bag with me, even though we only play with D6s because Rhea actually made me a dice bag and it's really pretty. And I like having it on the desk with me. And then I will usually have something to just fidget with because I have ADHD and focusing is really hard. So
anybody else have kind of standard stuff that they have set out when we're recording?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
In my game go bag, I have my character sheet up, obviously, in a PDF document. I always make sure I have water with me when we're recording.
Oh, yeah, that too.
yeah, water is just super. Because we're talking for like 3 to 4 hours on average when we record. And I voice quality is something that's very important to me, especially when I'm doing character voices. So that's why I'm always making sure that I stay hydrated. In addition to dice, I just keep D6s on my desk. It's just a bunch of random D6s that I've gathered from my mess of a dice bag. I'm looking into getting character-specific dice for Blair soon.
Oh, that would be so good.
Yes, I'm looking into doing that soon, but I've yet to make that purchase. The other thing in my gaming go bag is, on sessions where I feel like I'm not going to be as focused, I have a little journal with these toned pages. It's more like a sketchbook. And what I do is I have a dip pen and a container of ink on my desk, and I like to take notes in character. I like to take down notes as Blair would imagine things, and I do little doodles in the margins.
That's so awesome.
I just do little sigils and stuff, and it's super fun, and it's something that keeps me engaged and not only in character, but also keeps me paying attention as to what's happening in the game as well.
I did not know you did that. That's really fucking
cool. I remember
cool.
you telling me that you were going to start doing that because we had to test to see if it would be okay on the audio, but I don't think I've actually seen any of the stuff. So yes, definitely.
Yeah, because
share
my pen is a little loud. And I have to give credit to Holly Conrad at Commander Holly, I think is her Twitter. I don't know. But Commander Holly, she, in her D&D campaign, she takes in character notes sometimes. And I remember seeing pictures of that on Twitter like a long, long time ago. And I was just like, oh my God, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
And so I just adapted that for Blair.
I also have specific things.
Yeah, go for it.
So I do have character-specific dice for Myra. I bring my whole dice bag, but I dig out... I have these, like, swirly green and white dice with, like, gold pips. They're, like, the little Chessex 12mm. Mm-hmm. And those are Myra's dice. I just got, like, a bunch of D6s for her. I also always have my physical blades book on hand. I also usually have the PDF blades book open in case I need to quickly find a section. I have a notepad document for notes and a second one for, like, if I need to reference Myra backstory stuff. And I keep my character sheet in Google Sheets. I think I don't know, if anybody follows me on Twitter, I've definitely posted, like, blank character sheets. That's the one I use.
And they're so beautifully crafted.
I should, like, find those, like, dig up the links on Twitter somewhere.
Put them in the show notes. Does anyone have a dice jail?
I don't personally have a dice drill, but during sessions, if one dice is like particularly rolling bad, I will set it aside on my desk and I'm just like, you're banned for the rest of the night.
Yeah. I have a tin that I use for dice jail. And there are a lot of D6s in there because people know that in the back half of the sections, my dice will betray me.
They're doing it for the drama.
Yeah.
So this is one question that I definitely wanted to do, because Josie and I have talked about this a little bit. So open_sketchbook sent in a question. What is transitioning like medically/magically in your take on blades? I always want to know this about every fantasy world.
I was curious about that.
Yeah, this is a really good question. So I'll kind of give my like very broad answer, and then Josie, if you've got kind of more details that maybe you've thought of for Minx and some of the other characters.
I do. I came prepared for this one.
Yeah. my thinking was that it's this is a setting with alchemy, so I have just been sort of thinking of it as there's, you know, alchemical things, potions and the like that are used. Because again, this is a setting where like you can turn ghosts into drugs and like drink ghosts' dreams. So I feel like people can probably figure
Don't
out
do
a way.
Ghost dreams.
Yeah, in this setting, like, if you're able to do that, I feel like you can probably also figure out a way to, you know, handle the physical transitioning if people want to do that through alchemy as well. But those are my kind of broader thoughts on it. Josie, I will pass this off to you.
Yeah, I put a lot of thought into this in like every sort of RPG I play, because just by a default, all my characters are trans unless stated otherwise for whatever reason. And like the answer I keep coming back to is, yeah, just like alchemical bullshit, we have magic. But like I've also looked into like historically how it's done. And like, yeah, there's various herbs and diet changes that can result in minor changes. In an MTF direction, it's pretty easy to get any given hormone into your system. It's reducing ones you don't want that is tricky. But yeah, there are small concoctions and dietary changes that could have been made. And I imagine some of those happen in fantasy settings and probably a little bit of Blades of the Dark, because like medical practice is a lot more hearsay and less codified, and I imagine more things are willing to be tried.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like the hormone pills we have now come from somewhere, so it shouldn't be too hard to get the components and produce something similar alchemically. Mm-hmm. And there's also just like surgery wise, that's historically been done, not in a totally reconstructive way. Mm-hmm. Like at least in an MTF direction, there are certain like removal processes you can do. I'm thinking Minx is not there with that, and it's just kind of on alchemical potion hormones.
Yeah. My goal with the way that I'm kind of running Blades has been to have it be also sort of a more generally gender-fluid society.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like people being trans or non-binary or gender fluid is, it's only a big deal in that it's like, oh, okay, this is how I need to address you now. Mm-hmm. And I will respect that as part of your identity. It's not,
it's more accepted than it is in our current society,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, I think that a lot of the kind of medical stuff, transition things, alchemical potions, like that is pretty well researched and readily available, because there are people, you know, there's people who want to take advantage of it. So it is made available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I will also mention it hasn't come up, I think, specifically in game, but both Kay and Amancio are trans as well as Minx.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I remember also we have a non-binary adversary at some combat.
Oh, yeah. Arun, yeah. The alchemist that you all framed.
I also know that Finn, in her backstory, she learned a lot about how to fight back against oppressive people from Chael, who is also non-binary.
Yes, yes. Aww. Chael hasn't really had a lot of screen time yet.
We gotta fix that.
Yeah, yeah. Season 2 goal. Yeah, so I'm. Thank you for asking that. That's something that like I've kind of had in the back of my head, but haven't really had a chance to discuss too much. So
same here. And yeah, the setting is trans as shit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the beauty of Blades in general, is that it can be almost literally whatever you want. It is so light on the details in the rulebook that you can fill in the gaps however you'd like for almost anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing I like is that Rhee made like this the house rule that like there's no like transphobia, misogyny, like homophobia, all of those.
Yeah.
Ace phobia.
Yeah.
None of that. None of that shit. Because that's
those
not
are all
fun.
Things that are important to all of us and us as a group.
Uh-huh.
And something that we definitely want to convey in the show. So
yeah,
that's just a house rule we decided on, because that's where our morals lie. If you can't already tell by this point in the show.
Yeah.
If you hadn't noticed. Yeah, I made that decision really deliberately, like, kind of even before I started recruiting players, was that, like, that was something I just didn't... There's a tendency, particularly in sort of, like, darker settings like Blades, to lean on those sort of, you know, isms and phobias and whatnot as a way of showing,
it's
like,
dark.
How...
It's gritty. Nothing is safe. And I'm so sick of that. It's
and it's just
tired.
Like, yeah, it's like you don't have to do that. That's not necessary. You can show the darkness and struggle of the setting without it being, you know, built upon the prejudices that we have in the real world.
Exactly.
Cough, cough, altered carbon, cough, cough.
And kind of, the other thing is that sort of pulling from the setting is the main religious, quote-unquote religious organization in the setting is literally called the Church of the Ecstasy of the Flesh.
Yep.
Which is premised on the idea that the body and the physical is sacred and that, you know, the pursuit of physical pleasure in whatever form, you know, sex, good food, drugs, drink, comfortable clothes, whatever, is like
holy.
Paramount. That's, yeah, that is a sacred thing to pursue. So like, yeah, nobody's going to be judging you for the body that you have or the body that you want to have or the people that you want, mm-hmm. you know, that you are touching bodies with, like,
yeah,
or not, you know, it's just like, as long as you are, you know, doing things that are good for your physical body and other people's bodies, like, sure, yeah. Go for it. Yeah. It's all good.
And that springs, this is a tangent, but that springs from the fact that in this world of Blades, that the afterlife and the supernatural is all viewed as very evil and chaotic and stuff. And that's why I think it's so interesting that the people of Duskfall really celebrate the physical world, because not only is it temporary, it's so precious to them, because afterwards, everybody knows that they're probably going to go to a horrible place when they die.
Yeah, they're going to become a ghost and try to eat people's faces.
Until they get disintegrated by the ghost wardens or whatever.
Yeah.
I think, like, also just, like, on the topic of, like, at least in, like, sexual and gender diversity, I think it's also been great on the show that we've seen, like, a huge variety in, like, the types of people that the magpies run into. Like, we've had people who speak sign language. We've had people who obviously don't fit into the standard straight white male prototype that seems to really permeate in steampunk settings, especially. I like how we're getting further from that, and I like how we're changing the typical stories that are told, or at least the leads in those stories, because I think it's super important just in the actual play podcast community in general. It's very white dude saving the world a lot of the time. And I like some, like, one of the things that drew me to the project is, like, especially, like, once we got started, was how it felt like, you know, like the Sherlock Holmes movies, like the Robert Downey Jr.
RDJ ones?
Those ones. It, like, feels like a lot like that tonally sometimes, but like, it's not Robert Downey Jr. in the lead role. It's like, it's queer women, which is amazing.
I think that's a perfect metaphor for the setting, is that it very much looks like the RDJ Sherlock Holmes.
I've literally used that as my music for
so
this.
So it's like that, and then Six of Crows and Crooked Kingdom all together, but with like the diversity of those books, and then turned up a notch as well. So
yeah.
I will say, I talked about this when I was on I Am Here, when I did an interview on that podcast, but in terms of kind of the NPCs, I have it open right now. I literally have a spreadsheet of the main kind of named NPCs that you all have run into. And like, I have, you know, occupation, residence, you know, if I do anything particular with their voice, stuff like that. But then I also have, like, what is their gender? Are they a person of color? What is their, you know, sexuality? Do they have a disability? And it's a good way for me to kind of track patterns of, like, okay, you know, like, for one thing, like, I can say, like, I haven't done as good a job as I would like on having trans and non-binary characters and disabled characters as well. So, like, that's something I want to step up in season two, is to make sure that I am including more of you know, representation of those people. Because it's like, yeah, I think we're all very consciously trying to make sure that, you know, like Madge said, that this is not, you know, straight white cis dude territory.
Right.
I gotta say, I have enjoyed just finally being in an RPG where, like, more than half the cast, including the PCs, is female or non-male.
Yes.
Yeah, it's been super refreshing.
Because I'm in so many other like gaming spaces where that's not the case.
I've been in a lot of spaces where I've been in games with three other guys, and I'm the only girl. And those games,
I don't like being the only girl.
It's really uncomfortable. Being the only non-male person in the group gets like really stressful. In one of the games I was in, my character started out as like the genius character who was supposed to help out with stuff. And by the end, she got turned into like a side character for an NPC, a male NPC as his love interest, whose only thing had to do with like losing him. And it was not great by the end of it. And I'm glad that this is not that.
Ugh. Yeah, I think we've all had pretty unpleasant experiences with that.
I'm like really new to doing RP in like spaces like this that are heavily male. I'm used to like heavily non-male because I came from like internet roleplay. And I actually played like a lot of dudes after a while. And like I don't play dudes almost at all anymore because I just want to make sure that I'm pushing more women characters into it.
Yeah.
Which I think is a really big difference just between written role play and actual tabletop, because that's where I got my start too, on Fake Geek Girls a while ago. I don't know if they're still doing it, but like when it was going, I was on the show and I talked about how that's how I got my start too, was a lot of text RP and going with that. And it's way different.
Maybe that's why we also readily fic.
But yeah, it's a huge difference just because that is a very female-dominated space and non-male-dominated space. And then you get into tabletop and it's like, why are all these guys here? Like, no offense to the guys, obviously. But like,
yeah, there's some good eggs out there. And probably if you are.
Yeah. The good eggs in my life know who they are because I tell them they're good eggs constantly. But they're... like when you're in a space for long enough, you start seeing like the patterns, you know, of like the guys that you want to avoid because they're going to turn into those guys. Capital T, capital G.
We got on a giant sidebar.
We did.
That's okay. Hey, it's important.
Get away from us, but I'm liking this conversation.
It's very important.
Yeah. It's a good conversation.
It's always great.
Yeah.
Remember when we said we weren't going to talk for more than an hour?
Yeah, I was going to say, we're going to, just so we don't end up with this being 2 hours. Yeah, another question that was sent in from our good friend Waffles.
Hi, Waffles.
Who we all love.
They make us fan art, and it's great.
Yeah.
Show them some love.
Yes, so at Mahaffe asks, who are all of the PC's rivals, and how did they get to be frenemies?
Ooh.
So yeah, whoever wants to start with that.
I think like the one that may have been most prominent so far is me and Bazo. But yeah, like this was gone over in one of the episodes, but Minx, Bazo, and Nyrix all grew up together and were kind of like urchins together. And like in their late teens-ish or not too long before this, they were kind of going their own separate ways a little bit. And then Bazo and Minx were on a job together, and Minx essentially had the choice of helping Bazo not get sent to prison and getting away with loot, which I think we established was the four-poster bed she still has, and just, like, having money to, like, get started for herself, because that's kind of her driving force. She went with the bed, and Bazo spent time in Iron Hook, so... that wasn't very cool of her.
No.
Like, this rivalry is 100% her fault, although Bazo is not the man I thought he was.
Yeah, Bazo is definitely holding a grudge there. Minna, you want to go next?
Yes, the rival on my sheet is Salia, which I think we touched on her a little bit in season one. Basically, Myra was her apprentice. This is nothing that's not in her bio on the website. Myra was her apprentice, learned a lot from her, but it wasn't a great environment to be in. And I think she eventually just wanted, like, basically autonomy. So she, like, struck out on her own. And Sully was not too happy about that. So, yeah, she's her rival.
Yep.
She can still draw on her. She just won't enjoy drawing on that resource.
Yeah, because it's going to come with a lot of hooks and caveats.
A lot of strings attached.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
Madge.
Yeah. So on her playbook, one of the people that she doesn't quite get along with is Mercy, who is a stone cold killer. But I think canonically, in terms of what's going on currently in the campaign, her nemesis is more Lord Alistair Mora, who, just a recap of what happened in the finale. When Finn first got into the life, basically, of going on the streets and beating people up, she started doing that because Alistair Mora was paying for criminal gangs to terrorize the docks and basically extort people for money, which goes against a lot of who Finn is as a person. She is very much a person who wants everyone to be taken care of and believes that no one should have to live in fear of a higher power coming and kicking in their door and demanding them that they get paid money that they worked hard to earn. Especially if said money gets spent later on for the projects that Alistair Mora is currently working on. So the reason why they don't get along so well is because Finn and Chael teamed up and pushed the gangs out of the docks, which is also in her bio, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's that's her nemesis. And she's got the upper hand on her right now.
Yep. And Blair. This is Blair's nemesis.
On Blair's character sheet, her rival is Flint the Spirit Trafficker, and I wouldn't even go so far to say is that they're frenemies. I think they explicitly detest each other. I don't think he's come up as much in-game.
Yeah, he was in a couple episodes
a while back. We stole some shit from him, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I think framed him for something.
Yeah, we definitely framed him for something.
Yeah.
But yeah, they haven't really interacted much because Blair just hates him, and all spirit traffickers like so much because she thinks that someone's consciousness being ground up into drugs and being exploited and sold for someone else's pleasure is just like absolutely abhorrent.
So I like this question because it makes all of you tell me which of my children you love best. From at Magical Girl Kira, who are your favorite NPCs to interact with?
Oh. Oof. Can we just collectively say, just right off the top, Rigney?
I was going to say
Rigney's my favorite.
Yeah. Team Dad.
I was about to say this is hard, but like, it's Rigney.
I feel like we get Rigney out of the way and then we each have another favorite.
Good. Everyone loves my good dad friend.
He's so good.
Yeah, Rigney's a good egg. But yeah, who else do you like? So, this also helps me so that I know who to bring back more.
I don't remember her name, but Blair's friend from college who just like the gothic Lolita girl. I loved her.
Oh, she's the one who doesn't want to be friends with us.
Yeah, that's Adelaide, mm-hmm. who is nobility, who's not going to be around anymore, unfortunately. Which is such a shame, because she was great. I really liked her, but unfortunately... You two have gone in separate directions in that she is rich and you want to kill the rich. So it's a little awkward.
I mean, I also like Ghost Sword.
Ghost Sword.
I'll put that out there.
Yeah.
Ghost Sword. Sawtooth. I just like personally think like there could have been something with Finn and Sawtooth at some point that just never got touched on with them just bickering with each other so much. But also just I love how put upon Sawtooth is all the time.
Also, isn't he scruffy Tom Hardy?
Yes, that doesn't factor into this at all.
That's right. We did face cast him as Tom Hardy. Mm-hmm. I forgot about that.
Hey, I mean, he's not gone. He can come back.
He can't come back. Also, I really loved the police officers that I argued with while I was spying on the Red Sashes.
Yeah, that was very good.
You're horrible.
You're horrible.
Josie.
I really enjoy Lonnie and Roxanne.
Oh, they're good too.
Yeah.
I think they're great. They're good girls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I want them to be okay.
Yeah. They're good. They're gonna figure stuff out.
And Kay.
Yes.
Yeah, uh-huh. I mean, I'm too gay to not have her on the list.
Oh, it's hard to choose. So I'm between, I mean, I have to say Jaren because he's like Myra's other best friend. And also I really enjoy them.
Yeah.
I think I kind of dropped him in your lap, didn't I? Oh, no, he's on my sheet. But then I made up a whole backstory with him and Myra. Also, Bazo Baz is really fun and a direct attack on me at all points.
Not intentional, but here we are.
I know! I don't... He's just, for some reason, people play him as, like, exactly the kind of character who's a direct attack on me, and this has happened with multiple different GMs independently. Like, as a note, Super Arrow Ace, still really like Bazo Baz.
Yeah.
Very good.
Well, I just got to... So I just, in the season finale, I was just editing the part where...
Was the part where he came in with, like, a cut on his forehead and I died? Yeah, a cut on his
forehead and Minna, Minna makes this, like, pained... Die? Yeah, there was an audible pained gurgling noise. It was pretty great.
Look, he's just very good.
Any NPC, any male NPC over the age of 40 is always definitely an attack on me also.
Yeah. I have to be careful about that, because...
Just due to who I am as a person.
So, also from Magical Girl Kira, how have your characters changed since the start of the game?
I feel as though Blair hasn't really changed too much yet in Season 1. Season 2 should change that. We're going to get a little bit deeper into the character arc I have planned for her, but Blair has changed in the fact that, like, throughout all of Season 1, I've mentally been developing her, and her personality has kind of been fluid in that I've been kind of been figuring out who she is as I play her, and she's a very improvisational character, and also visually as well. It took me all of season one, so like almost a year, for me to figure out what visually she looked like, for me to draw her for the character portraits on our website. And there's lots of sketches on my computer and in my sketchbook of me just figuring out what the heck she looks like, which is very rare for me, because me as an artist, a visual person, the way characters look is usually one of the first things I figure out, because that usually helps me to inform what kind of person this is. And that wasn't the case for Blair, and that was something that was unique for me. So I wouldn't say Blair's changed so much as she's kind of developed baseline who she is throughout of season one. And now that I feel like she has a bit of a foundation, now we can go more into how she's going to grow. And that's exciting for me.
I feel like Minx is one of the very few characters I've played who didn't change radically from conception to execution, which I guess is kind of the point, because a very put-together facade is part of her. She's still a very me character, and if you've played with me, you know what that fucking means, but I think, like, the biggest change was, like, starting when she killed Winfield. Because that was kind of a spur-of-the-moment thing. I wasn't expecting her to be so, like, angry, I guess. I was originally intending her to be, like, even more problematic with, like, wanting to be rich and shit like that. But, like, that kind of put a more sympathetic edge to it, I guess. Mm-hmm. And that just kind of happened spur-of-the-moment.
Finn, she changed a little bit from how I first envisioned her. Because I play a lot of tanks, just in general. In role-playing games, but she started out as a brute force tank who didn't really have much driving her as like driving her in this life, besides the fact that she pushed out a game once and doesn't want it to happen to anyone ever again. And like a lot of me being quiet was also me figuring out who Finn was, because similarly, like, I had an idea, but I didn't really know how to translate that. And that eventually transitioned into Finn's actual character traits of her not speaking up unless she knows that she can trust a person or knows that she can get along with them. I think, like, arc-wise, I think she's gone from someone who cares about a neighborhood to someone who cares about an entire city. And specifically, she cares about the magpies and the whole family that she's built there, because obviously she has her own family and it's a big one, but the magpies are close to her and our family, and it's a completely different relationship, even though they don't talk as much. Which will also be changing in season two, because she's going to have to talk about the fact that she was in prison.
Please. We love you. Talk to us.
Yeah.
Please talk about it instead of balling it up like the trauma.
Yeah.
Myra's definitely started out, I think before the Magpies was kind of a loner, and like we've kind of seen her like warm up and start to really care about these people. And I think a lot changed when we decided that Myra and Finn had started the Magpies together, and that they'd known each other longest, because that friendship has really developed and been I'm really happy that happened, because I didn't know whether to expect that, and that's been a really nice thing that's come about throughout the course of the show. And then she's starting to get closer to the others, and it's very good.
Yeah, I think that has been one of my favorite things just sort of through season one, is watching the crew go from like a group of people who get along and are working together to becoming this really like tight-knit group that really cares about each other a lot. Mm-hmm. It's been very good. Found family, man.
I got called out by Emma about the found family trope. It's like, I should have known because you love it, but...
It's good.
I think we're all suckers for it in this group.
Yeah.
It's something that we all love in stories.
It's very good. And it really fits with the story that we're telling, I think.
Yeah. So, kind of going from the how the Magpies came together to how the podcast came together, at Bad Witch Mills asks,
"Hi Sarah,
how did you all go about forming the RP group?" Which I guess I can talk about a little. So I had the idea for several months that I wanted to do a Blades in the Dark podcast, because I had had the opportunity to run Blades a couple times online, a little bit for my in-person group of friends here in Chicago. And I had this big Google Doc with plans of like, okay, here's what I need to do to, you know, get the show going. And like, these are all of the like accounts I need to sign up for. And this is how, like, all of these very detailed plans. But step one was, you need to find people to actually play the game.
No, really?
So what I did was I put together a Google form that had a whole bunch of questions of like ranging from like, when are you available, to what is kind of your RPG style? Because I think we've kind of all been in gaming groups where you've had a few people who want to do like really story-driven stuff. You've had people who want to do the very mechanics-focused stuff. Mm-hmm. You have people who just want to cause mayhem. And like, if you don't get everybody on the same page, it's a problem. Yeah. So I wanted to make sure that everybody would kind of be in line with the kind of narrative that I wanted to do. God, what else? I think I asked about like recording experience. I asked a lot of stuff.
Yeah, you did. I remember that before. Form.
Yeah. Recording experience, RPG experience.
Yeah, like systems that you'd played before.
Yeah, it was a lot. I asked a lot of questions.
You mentioned prioritizing like marginalized identities, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the questions, it was an optional one, but it was like, hey, if you fall into, you know, any of these sort of more marginalized groups and you feel comfortable with it, let me know, because I want to, you know.
Yeah, spotlight.
Highlight
yeah.
that.
And we ended up with four queer girls, so that's great. Yep.
So yeah, that's how I ended up with this group. I made that form. I sent it out in a ton of places. I got a lot of responses. I got like over 30 responses.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That I was then sitting there like, oh god, I have to sort through this. What have I done?
Yeah, I remember you contacting me like really shortly after I had submitted my form, or before I submitted my form, and asking me about it.
Yeah, I think yours came in a couple days before I sort of closed it, and then I reviewed everything and made my choices, and I'm
so
really
nervous.
Happy with it.
Rhea and I personally have been friends for a very long time, and I feel as though I may have been among the first people you approached about interest in the game. I vaguely remember you talking to me about you planning a podcast before you even put that form out, and I was way into it. Yeah. So
yeah, I'd shared it with, because I had been in another RP group at the time that was kind of like the game at that point was sort of falling apart. But I shared it. Yeah, I shared it with that group first because I was like, well, I know these people and I've played with them before. And Kim was the only person from that group who applied. But yeah, I also kind of went for people who I had gamed with before, because then I, you know, that also sort of helped where like I knew what your gaming style
was
like.
Yeah, you knew how we would react. Yeah.
Yeah. but yeah, that's how the group came together. I basically recruited people, and I'm really happy with it. I'm very glad that this is the group we have and the characters we have.
I'm happy with this group, also too. I love you guys.
Friendships that have developed.
Yeah,
since
it's been really great.
Yeah, I definitely feel as though I've gotten closer to a lot of you since we've started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I was, like, friends with, like, maybe any of you before this started. I got closer to, like, I think all of you.
I mean, I remember how we didn't even think that we could talk to each other about fanfiction before.
Oh my god.
Until, like, halfway through
season
one.
And now we can just, like, plot in the background and pull shit off.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, personally, when this whole thing was starting out, I was really self-conscious about it because I had been involved in another actual play podcast. It fell apart due to some difficulties between the GM and the players. And I was like really nervous about getting involved with an actual play again because I like didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what it would be like going in from the start, knowing that everything was going to be recorded. And which is why I waited so long to actually submit anything. But now, like after session zero with everybody, I sort of had the feeling that this was going to be a good group. And I'm really glad that everything's worked out how it has.
Yeah, I'm definitely glad you took that leap of faith.
Yeah.
You're a great addition to the group.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So another question we have from
Chrism Phoenix.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to go with. At Chrism Phoenix asks, are Minx and Kay, parentheses, buff gondolier lady, still seeing each other? Yeah, Josie, you want to?
Yeah, it was my understanding that that was mostly just for fun. Neither of them have plans of making a relationship out of it. But booty calls are on the table.
Yeah, and I think because with Minx and Nerix, they're... Josie, I don't know if we've ever formally talked about this, but my understanding has been that, like, it's an on-again, off-again relationship, and even, you know, when they are on, it's still an open relationship.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense.
At least in terms of, you know, sexual partners, simply by virtue of Nerix's job.
Well, yeah.
And yes, Kay was always kind of going into that with Minx as the understanding of, like, this is fun, it's casual, it's not ever gonna turn into a relationship. So in the background, they may still kind of be seeing each other in the future as a casual thing. But you know, particularly right now,
it's not a good time for lovers.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and also like Minx and Nerix are on again, so Minx's attention is probably more that direction at this point. But yeah, that's kind of the nature of their relationship with Minx and Kay. So yeah, Kay's good. Mm-hmm. I like her.
Kay's a good egg. I love her so much.
All right. And so I think for our last audience question, we are going to go with, from at Hazel_Da_Basil.
Hazel to Basil.
Yep. Hazel to Basil, asks, where did the name the Magpies come from? So I think, I mean, we kind of have two answers. We've got the out of character and the in character answers. Out of character.
You asked us what our name was going to be, and that was going to be the name of the podcast.
Yes, yeah, because I had been sitting here like, coming up with names for things.
It's hard.
as you've probably gathered by this point, I have a really hard time with. So I explicitly told the group, I was like, okay, we've built your characters. We've built the crew sheet. You guys need to come up with a name for the crew. By the way, the name of your crew is also probably going to be the name of the podcast. And everyone was like, okay, thanks.
Yeah, we eventually got to the Magpies and it stuck. Because we also thought about leaving the pins, too.
Because they steal shiny things, Magpies, or at least
we originally were planning we were going to start as a group of thieves.
And then we never stole anything ever.
Turns out we were very bad at that.
Well, what I recall was there's a special ability on the Shadows sheet that is like pack rats.
Yeah, and that's where
you just have a ton of stuff in the lair, and you guys thought about taking that one. You decided not to take it initially and took a different special ability, but you were very like enamored of the idea
of it being
of having it be
cozy.
Like, oh, we just steal a bunch of stuff and fill our hideout with it.
I mean, that is how
and
we
then
functioned initially. That's how we got our enemies. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
At the beginning.
Yeah. And then you guys have turned out to be like the worst thieves in the world.
The worst criminals in the world, really.
Yeah.
We're very bad at being
bad. We're too good people for this.
We're the worst criminals you've ever heard of, but you have
heard
of
us.
We made really sure of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, flinging your pins around everywhere. So yeah, Madge, you were going to talk about where it came from.
Yeah, because part of the question is also like who formed the Magpies. And the answer to that is that Myra and Finn formed the Magpies after they worked together on a job and it went really well. And they decided to just like see where it went. I think the Magpies, like specifically them deciding to call themselves Magpies, came after they stole all that furniture from the, from the Grey Coats.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we stayed in the Grey Coats, their hotel thing that they have going on. And instead of just like staying for the night and being on with their lives, they stole every single bit of furniture out of their hotel rooms and moved it over to their place in the Nest, which wasn't called the Nest at the time, but they moved all of the furniture over there and just said it's ours now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like one thing this crew excels at is branding.
Yeah.
Branding is consistency. That's what I was taught in art school.
Yep, yep. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that's when they officially became the Magpies at that point. Because I feel like up until then, they were just playing around with different names. And nothing stuck.
Yeah.
Who got/made the pins? Where did the pins come from?
It definitely wasn't from Finn, because she doesn't have that kind of flair.
I feel like it's Minx.
Yeah, I was going to say, it feels like a Minx thing.
It's like, We need to have some style about this, Tears.
Yes!
We need to have a call sign.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Yeah. I think that's pretty much going to wrap it up for our season one Q&A feelings episode. In 2 weeks, tune in for the start of season two. And yes, and a very exciting announcement about how you will be able to support the show. And for now, keep listening to hear some highlights from our season one blooper reel. Thank you all so much for listening. We appreciate every comment and tweet and like that we get. It means the world to us. For these pilot episodes,
can we not die?
Well, yeah, I'm not gonna kill you guys this early. I mean, if you do something really catastrophically stupid, I might not be able to help you, but
challenge accepted.
And one of you is gonna have to say something quickly, because ghosts typically are not friendly. Blair thinks they're friendly. They're not friendly.
They're friends.
No, they're hungry for your life essence. If you're trying to set up an ambush, that's a good plan. The only problem is they don't usually attack me.
Why not you?
She looks at Blair, which is looking down a significant amount. She just kind of raises an eyebrow and is like, I don't know, it must be my sparkling personality.
Indeed.
Okay.
So the 6 foot tall, incredibly muscular woman who could easily bench press any of you says, well, maybe not easily with Finn, but.
So,
it's like 12 swords.
It's like 12 swords? Okay.
Yeah, it's a lot.
That is not a lot.
I'm not looking for a collection of swords.
It's not enough.